KBOO.fm where you can get the free app, and it's via KBOO.fm that we go out to all the ships at sea.
Thanks, Teresa. You are listening to The Boo, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. We're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoints, and today, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with Arun Gupta about the takedown of the Bundy brothers. He also gets an eyewitness account of the bloody war in Syria and the U.S. role in fanning the flames. At 11 on Between the Covers, Jane Smiley discusses her trilogy of Some Luck, Early Warning, and Golden Age. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, Jen Chavez sits down with local documentarian Kelly Kend to talk about her new film, Yeah, Maybe No, an exploration of sexual consent and coercion. SW Concert previews the Portland International Film Festival's Oregon Shorts program, and Ian Sundahl talks about the Hollywood Theater's monthly Repressed Cinema series. That's all coming up right after Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Thanks for listening to KBOO, your community radio station. And thanks, members, for your support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Thursday, January 28th, will screen Landfill Harmonic. Landfill Harmonic follows the Recycled Orchestra of Keitora, a Paraguayan musical group that plays instruments made entirely out of garbage. When their story goes viral, the orchestra is suddenly catapulted into the global spotlight. This 2014 film has been described as a testament to the transformative power of music and the resilience of the human spirit. That's January 28th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, January 28th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.fm on the web. Today's guest is George Werther. He is a writer. He's written 36 books or so, and he recently had an article out Eugene Register Guard that I really want to bring your attention to. More than that, I want to bring George to you. It completely and utterly debunks whatever positive could possibly be said about the Hammond clan. They are anything but innocent ranchers that accidentally ripped off the government to the tune of millions of dollars and set fires all over the West. Quite a few fires, I might say. If they weren't good old white boys, they would be arsonists, and writ large too, to such a degree that it might border on terrorism. So despite what Greg Walden would have you believe, the Hammonds are no lily-white, innocent ranchers. I want to also mention, too, that we should just call this the debunk house. We got the cowboys and we've got the debunkers, and we're all ready to go with that. But Donald Trump has decided to forego the hard questions at the debate. Instead, he's planning to do, he's out with a little do-gooding of his own. Yes, don't ever imagine that the Donald doesn't have a heart. He sure does. In fact, he's going to be doing a talk, I guess, at a fundraiser for the Wounded Warrior Project. Well, it turns out, running right parallel to that story in mainstream news, is another story about the, well, hey, presto, guess what? Wait for it. Yes, that's right. The Wounded Warrior Project. Turns out that project spends lavishly would be an understatement on itself. And ex-employees who have been fired for bringing this problem up. The charity has embraced aggressive styles of fundraising, marketing, management, and it has spent a significant proportion on overhead. Since it came to being in 2003 as a basement operation, handing out backpacks to wounded veterans, it has evolved into a fundraising juggernaut. And the funds that they raise, very little of that actually goes to veterans, but quite a lot goes to putting on enormous parties in Las Vegas. The organization spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on public relations and lobbying campaigns, not for the wounded warriors, but for themselves, to deflect criticism of the spending and the fight, and to fight legislative efforts to restrict how much nonprofits spend on so-called overhead. And that said, there's a lot more to say about a lot more things. But, you know, we're going to save that for the website if indeed we do get back to writing a blog on the website. Right now, I want to bring on George Wessner, incredible writer, one of my absolutely favorite journalists out there, to talk about a piece that he wrote in the Eugene Register Guard about the Hammonds. Good morning, George. Thanks so much for being with us today on Air Cascadia.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, the piece you wrote was I started looking at it and I thought, well, yeah, right, we know the Hammonds are, you know, they've got a few skeletons in the old bunkhouse, and but then continuing on, they are flat out lifelong criminals. They're really something out of the wild, wild west. Could you want to go over for our listeners some of what you found out about them?
Well, the basic message is that the media up to now and has been reporting that the Hammonds were jailed for merely setting several arson fires. And if you go back and you look over the past decade, you find that they've been involved in many other criminal events, including setting other fires, but also threats to government employees, trying to interfere with government workers. Many kinds of antagonistic and often, you would say, on the verge of violent episodes with the federal administrators of the refuge and in some cases BLM lands nearby as well.
They're going to negotiate with. They expect that they're going to be able to get their grazing permit reinstated, despite the fact that here they are blasting out messages to the general public about how they don't believe in grazing permits, yet they're apparently negotiating with the Bureau of Land Management. They've been happy to take handouts, all sorts of corporate agribusiness handouts from the government that they hate so much over the years. But do please continue, because you've got some real dirt on these people.
Well, that is one of the ironies is that as they show their disdain for the federal government, they've like a lot of the people in agriculture and in some of these rural areas have a high dependency on federal programs. But you know, for example, you know, getting back to some of the criminal things, in 2001 they poached some deer. At least seven, and in order to hide the evidence of the poaching, they set a fire. That's one of the fires that are part of the charges that they're in jail for, the arson fires. But it also almost apparently burned up a camp where there was a hunting guide with some clients who had to avoid the flames. And then in 2006, another fire was set by Steve Hammond. And that fire was, if you know how fires are being fought, there was another existing wildfire burning that the BLM crew was fighting, And the fire that Steve Hammond set burned towards the fire crew, which again had to evacuate because he had fires burning from two different directions towards them. According to High Country News, the over a 28-year period, the Hammonds had set fires that totaled 45,000 acres. So, for example, Congressman Greg Walden has called them responsible ranchers and sort of minimizes what they did because one of the fires that they're in jail for right now was burned only 130 or so acres. But that was only one of many fires over a long period of time. And in other cases, when they'd set fires, a lot of times they'd just get a slap on the hand, you know, be told that they were possibly in violation, but nothing would happen. They also had threatened, you know, federal employees. I can't repeat on the air, you know, but, you know, a lot of obscenities and things like I'm going to, you know, take off your head and things like that and worse. And they were taken into custody over that and charged with felony for interfering with federal officers, but that had a 3-year sentence, but they only spent 2 nights in jail because at that time Congressman Bob Smith intervened on their behalf. So, you know, you see over and over again where they are interfering with the government, doing things that I'm absolutely certain if I or you did, and yet have not suffered the consequences. And I think that's if you sort of stand back, that is part of the larger picture going on here, even with the Malheur situation, in the sense of Cliven Bundy, who is the father of the Amon Bundy and Ryan Bundy, who were two of the leaders of the Malheur takeover. Cliven Bundy has been basically walking around free now for several years after a confrontation with BLM in southern Nevada over grazing, and including, you know, all these militia with him that were pointing guns at federal agents. And I'm like saying, if I were to point guns at, you know, federal agents, I don't think, you know, I might not even be alive, but I'd certainly be in jail if for doing something like that. And the because of the lax enforcement of that and other events that have gone on in over the years, as with the Hammonds, I think that gives a sense that they're right. One of the things that becomes clear from earlier events in this Malheur thing is that the Bundys and others out there believe, because they had not been arrested and that they were able to freely sort of come and go to the refuge, that indirectly everybody was agreeing that their interpretation of the Constitution and the laws was a correct one. And in a sense, I think that there was something in the same thing going on with the Hammonds over the years, where they were able to do things at the refuge and towards public employees that maybe gave them a sense that they were correct in their interpretation of events and things, and led up to eventually being charged with arson, 2 charges of arson. And then one of the unfortunate consequences of that charge was that the charges required a mandatory 5-year imprisonment under the charges that they were brought against them and were indicted on by the jury. But the judge involved in that case reduced the jail terms to 3 months for Dwight Hammond and a year for Steve Hammond. But that was appealed to a higher court, the Ninth Circuit Court, and then the court agreed that reduction was not justified, and so they were ordered to go back to jail. And a lot of people who don't know the sort of the history of that whole court events, of course, feel like that's unfair that they had to go back to jail after they had been released. But they, you know, it's very common if you're appealing something that you're allowed to, you know, be released from jail until the charges are determined, whether the appeal to the higher court, you know, vindicates the government attorneys or their attorneys. In any case, that is part of what sparked the Malheur events. And if you only think that the only thing they did was burn, you know, 100 acres of grasslands on the refuge, you might think that that's a harsh charge. But when you see this long history of violence and intimidation of public officials, then you think differently about it. The refuge manager of the Mount Hood Refuge back in the 90s, you know, he had to send his wife away from burns because they were getting death threats all the time. And we're fearful that, you know, indeed they would have their home burned or their, you know, somehow get attacked. And that really is, to me, an indicative of lax enforcement that allowed that to go on for so long. And, you know, you can argue that the Hammonds felt like they were being put upon by federal officials.
Hardly, to the tune of $300,000 in direct subsidies of taxpayers. Hardly put upon. Judge, we're out of time. I would like to hear a lot more from you about this. The main question that everybody ought to be asking, I believe, and not just asking themselves, they ought to be asking it directly to elected officials, to legislators. Why are these people being given special consideration? Why do laws not apply to them? It is very likely that they will, most of them, skate when they actually do go to trial. But why is the federal government so frightened of people like the Bundys and like the Hammonds that laws that would certainly apply to the rest of us, and very harshly too, I might add, why are those laws not applicable to the likes of the Bundys and the Hammonds? I don't get it. It's like there's designer law just for them. Is it because it could not possibly be because public outcry in support?